start a business, you can either spend time or money. And I believe that time is more valuable than money, right? Because you can earn money again. You can't earn time again. Like once you've spent the time, it's gone. And so what we try to do, and what a good franchisor will do is, you know, you probably heard turn years into months and turn months into days. Like, you know, I took 33 years of power washing knowledge, condensed down into a 10-week training program, and then created an ongoing coaching program to make sure that that knowledge transfer stays so that franchisees can get 33 years of knowledge on how to run a power washing business in a condensed period of time.
Constructing your life is about much more than just building a bank account. Each week, join mindset coach Austin Linney as he interviews guests who are constructing their dream lives and impacting the world around them on a daily basis. If you're an entrepreneur or wanting to start a business, or you just want to hear motivating stories of how others have overcome the odds, you are in the right place. And now for your host, Austin Linney.
Guys, welcome back to Construct Your Life. This is Austin Linney here. I have the man, Mr. Aaron Harper, in the house. How are you doing, sir?
I'm good. I'm excited to be here with you today.
Well, I mean, this is a good conversation because you just told me that you sold the area. I mean, if you would have told me you were selling a franchise of HVAC and plumbing, we might have had to end the interview right there. But now we compliment each other. I got a guy that I can recommend. And he can recommend me, and now we're in business. So I'm excited. Yeah,
don't worry, I won't franchise any HVAC, plumbing, or heating businesses. It's outside my interest basis.
I love it. So, why don't you kind of tell the audience a little bit about yourself, and then we'll just get rolling from there.
So I've been in franchising for years. My niche is residential and commercial service businesses. Both the brands I've been involved in prior to Rolling Suds. I was a W-2 employee at, and I helped both those brands become the largest brand in the world in that specific industry. So started with a carpet cleaning concept, helped grow that.
Dogs.
Sorry about that.
It's his birthday today. He could do what he wants.
It is his birthday, and he does what he wants every day, regardless of if it's birthday or not. So got involved in a drywall repair franchise. I worked for a big restoration company called Belfour. And they wanted to grow into a multi-brand platform. So me and the leadership team from the other company I worked for helped them do that, basically. And the first acquisition was a drywall repair brand. That brand was in pretty bad shape. 100 locations sold, 40 franchisees, and basically needed a complete overhaul. We did a turnaround of that brand, and then in 24 months, I added 223 locations to that business. And every one of them opened with jobs on the calendar and full-time labor hired prior to going to training. So been in the franchise industry for years, helped grow Belfour to a 12 brand system, 4,700 locations, 55 countries. And they wanted me to take on a 13th brand. They were like, yeah, like we'll double your salary and give you a really fancy title. And I was like, wait a minute, I can do this on my own. Looked at about 24 businesses across the country to franchise. Met the founders of Rolling Suds, which is a 33-year-old residential and commercial power washing business out of Pennsylvania. In September of 2022, we partnered, I raised capital, I acquired the franchise rights in January of 23. We started franchising in February of 23. Mm-hmm. And in 11 months, we've sold 104 locations to 34 franchisees in 22 states. And then I live in Nashville, I'm married, I've got a 2.5-year-old son, and my daughter is 14 months. My wife stays at home with the kids full time, God bless her.
Mm-hmm. Guys, let me take a minute to tell you about my buddies over at LeadHub, Ben and Aaron, the best humans I know. Not only are they amazing at marketing for trade companies, but Ben started his HVAC company in his garage, sold it for multi-million dollars. So when this guy talks, I listen. When we took over Dietz Mechanical, we had 22 reviews in 22 years. In 7 short months, we went from 22 reviews to 107. We went from a 4.2 to a 4.7. We tripled our Facebook presence and we tripled our calls. If you're an HVAC, plumbing, electric, landscaping company, and you're looking for a no BS approach to marketing, you're looking for people who have done it before, you got to go to leadhub.net.
So whether or not people realize it, and I hope they realize it, that everybody, I would assume, has touched a franchise if you're in America, right? Whether it be a gas station. For me, because I RV 90% of the time and been to every state, for me, it's a gas station. And there's Buc-ee's, right, which is the, you know, Texas loses their minds. There's Boxers people are wearing. There's Quick Trip. There's all these different locations. There's Subways and Five Guys and everything. When you walk in a company that's doing it right, you can – it's not people say experience, but to me, it's a feeling. And what do you think people miss the most about franchising that they're not paying attention to? Because there are franchises all through the country.
I honestly think it's like one of the like best kept secrets for some reason of like business. It's I don't know why it's a secret though. I have no idea. It's a massive multi-billion dollar industry that adds millions of jobs. That's just the franchising industry at large. And I think there's really two things that people think of when they think franchising is they think like legacy fast food brands like McDonald's or Chick-fil-A, or they think, I don't want to buy a franchise. I'm going to be restricted, or I'm going to, you know, I don't want to pay the fees. Or I had a buddy who bought a Subway and, you know, his business went under. And they kind of hear the bad things of franchising, which in every industry, you're going to have bad actors. You know what I mean? Like there's no way. I mean, you in your business, like I'm sure there's people who are like robbing insurance companies and like not doing the right thing, right? Like, but what people don't hear about is someone left a $250,000 job and stepped into a blue collar drywall repair business and replaced his income in the second year of operation. And all he did was invest $110,000. Like, you know what I mean? Like, that's a great story. So I think that you're right. It is a feeling. The brand has to be aligned with what feeling they're trying to give, not only the franchisees, but also the consumers. And they have to deliver on that. And so my hope is that for the work that I do with Rolling Suds and future brands and everything that I'm doing, we can kind of change that perspective a little bit of like, oh, it's just fast food, or, oh, it's no, it's bad. It's you know, so.
When I was in my late 20s, I caddied golf tournaments, but they were like celebrity golf tournaments and they were like big events like the Byron Nelson and everything. So I caddied 3 days in a row, two loops a day, 16 hour days. I'm on the last day. It's Sunday. I can barely stand up. I'm so tired. And they would just pair you up with random people. Here I am, a young guy reading Rich Dad Poor Dad, learning business, but bartending. And this guy walks up. He's 38 years old. He's got a beautiful wife. He's dressed to the nines. He walks up, hands me $200 and says, this is how it's going to go down, brother. He goes, I'm going to play eight holes. Then I got to jump on my plane and I'm going to go to a meeting. And he's like, we're going to have a great day. And the guy's just striping the golf ball. And he was like, I was like, when did you start playing? He's like, I don't know, like a year ago. And I was like, dude, what? I was like, what do you do? And he goes, well, funny enough, my dad had 20 McDonald's and I grew that to 60 in the last 2 years. And I'm going to buy 10 more. And I was just sitting there and I was like, okay, I want to be this guy. Like, right. And I remember that vividly because it changed the way I viewed business ownership. I was like, oh, okay, there's scale and it can happen quick. And is that what you see in the franchise space? Like when you get the playbook right, when you get the process right, I mean, you can go and you can go fast in a hurry.
Totally. I mean, yeah, that's what you're paying for. You can either, when you start a business, you can either spend time or money. And I believe that time is more valuable than money, right? Because you can earn money again. You can't earn time again. Like once you've spent the time, it's gone. And so what we try to do and what a good franchisor will do is, you know, you probably heard turn years into months and turn months into days. Like, you know, I took 33 years of power washing knowledge condensed down into a 10-week training program. and then created an ongoing coaching program to make sure that that knowledge transfer stays so that franchisees can get 33 years of knowledge on how to run a power washing business in a condensed period of time. I'll give you an example. Like, we're big in commercial. A lot of people hear power washing and they think it's a baby business. I'm going to buy a $300 machine. I'm going to knock doors. I'm going to clean driveways for $100, which there is, that is the majority of the business. So it makes sense that they think that. We're doing, you know, a 3,000 square foot house in 25 minutes. We're doing 132,000 square foot office complex in 3 days and charging the customer $14,000. You know, like, we're just built differently. But it took our founders 27 years to have any relevance in the commercial side of the business. They were predominantly residential that entire time. Well, every market that we've entered since we've launched, our franchisees have been majority commercial, utilizing the marketing infrastructure and, you know, the equipment and everything that we were giving them. And that just won't happen without a franchise. And so, yeah, if you can learn the system, hire the people, put them in place, you can go do that again over and over and over again. And that's where the scale comes from. And that's where the fees and the money you invest becomes well worth it, because you get to save the time that you don't otherwise have.
In the commercial, because we do a lot of commercial HVAC, we're kind of the only ones in the area. It's a really weird business, right? It's totally separate than residential. Marketing's different. It's more right. referral based. You're dealing with a maintenance guy a lot of the times. You're not really dealing with the boss. The owners might be somewhere else. If people want to step into that commercial space, like, what have y'all mastered in the commercial space?
So I'm actually asked to talk about this with, like, franchisors. They're like, Aaron, how are you, you know, like other franchisors that are friends of mine. Aaron, how are you generating commercial leads, like, for franchisees? Like, what are you doing? Because everyone else is like, they're playing in the Google GMB, you know, mm-hmm. SEO place with, you know, trying to get commercial business. So I'm like, I'm sorry, but I can't tell you.
I was like sitting there and I was like, man, I'm so ready to, like, get out my notes. Like this guy, I'm like, what a mother. Okay, fine. Whatever. You're not getting any of my leads yet. No.
So, I mean, really high level, we have a cold outreach program internally.
Okay.
And we're blasting and getting people on the phone, and we're getting qualified leads for franchisees, like, very high level. And there mm-hmm. are people mm-hmm. who specialize it on my team and suppliers who specialize it. And then we bring warm leads to franchisees and they go out and sell the job, and they pay on a per lead basis. Mm-hmm. And that is not playing in the same sandbox as the guy who's yeah. buying the AdWords of commercial pressure washing near me, which is going to cost a lot of money. There's going to be a lot of competition. And honestly, the guy who is managing 8 apartment buildings is not just Googling commercial pressure washing near me and then choosing the guy who has the most reviews. He's going to ask, he's going to ask people that he knows, you know, I mean, he's going to rely on relationships. And our mission statement at Rolling Suds is, this is a relationship. There's no way that you're going to build a massive business without meaningful relationships.
We just started, because when we took over the company 22 years, we just started selling maintenance contracts, even though they kind of just did them, but they didn't have a system. And what people don't understand is, like, don't get me wrong, like, the maintenance contract is great, but, like, the maintenance contracts leads to the $50,000 remodel and the plumbing and right. HVAC job. It's like, that just keeps us close to them, right? Do y'all have a maintenance contract with Rolling Suds, or is it more a per project basis?
So we're in Pennsylvania is where our corporate location is.
Okay.
We're on the other side of the state of where you're at. So we're in, we clean a residential building out there every 2 to 4 years. So there's no maintenance necessary on the okay. residential side. Certain use cases for different type of commercial customers warrant different needs. Like, for a fast food restaurant, for example, like, that needs to be cleaned quarterly. Mm-hmm. So that's a contract, right? But, like, an HOA that you know, is 16 buildings, like, that doesn't need to be cleaned probably more than once every 4 years, at least where we're at. Now, we're launching in places like Florida and the Carolinas and places where it's just, you're going to clean buildings more frequently due to humidity and other things like that. So it is something we're looking at in places like that as like, hey, we'll come back twice a year, for example, in Florida. This is the cost, and you can get some real recurring revenue on the residential side. But really the commercial side is where you're going to see more of that, like with fast food restaurants and gas stations and municipal buildings and some of these jobs that need to be done a lot more regularly.
So you've laid out kind of what y'all do. If somebody is sitting on the sidelines looking for an investment, they've thought about franchises, you know, who does that person have to be ready to invest in a franchise?
Yeah. So I actually just did a tweet about this last night. It doesn't necessarily need to be like you have this much sales experience or you've done this many years of operational, you know, you're this savvy. Like really what we're looking for is grit and desire to win no matter what comes up. And then also like always moving the goalposts, right? Like a lot of franchisees leave a job where they're making $200,000 a year. They buy another job. They get up to the point where they're at $1 million and they're making $200,000 a year, let's just say, for round math. Then they let the gas, they let the pedal off the gas. They stop investing in marketing. Like we're looking for the franchisees who like, A, they're leaving a job so they can own an asset. And B, they're looking like $1 million is like literally just a starting point. Like they're not going to be happy till they're $10 to $20 million business owners. Mm-hmm. And that might be other brands, which I plan on doing. Mm-hmm. That might be acquiring other operators who decide to get out or sell for whatever reason. That might be just maxing out a territory with as many trucks as possible within a territory, which there's 100,000 households in every one of our territories. And we do 2 to 3 territories per franchisee, like, you know what I mean? So like, that's a big, it's a big population. So I would say that it just is, it's more of a matter of like desire and grit and willingness and culture. I can teach operations. I can teach sales. I can teach all this other stuff with me and my team, but it's that willingness to like not give up no matter what that we're really looking for.
So you have an impressive resume. You have a lot of experience. You're moving quickly, very quickly, to 100 franchises in almost a year, year and a half. But as I sit here today, I can tell that you know what you're talking about.
Thank you.
What I'm interested in hearing is like, who did you have to become to be this guy? And then what did you have to unlearn about yourself through your 20s to be somebody in this seat?
Yeah, so I had to become someone who was willing to do like I mean, it's what I'm talking about with franchisees, willing to do whatever it takes, like to grow and not reach a ceiling. Right? Every business that I worked for, I learned the thing they teach me, then I learned to do it better than how they taught me, and I'll triple the numbers or quadruple the numbers or, you know, set records or whatever. And I've done this in multiple careers. And then I'm like, hey guys, like I have this thing. It's better now. I'm going to teach you how to do it. And then that way we can make the whole company grow. And every company's like, no. I don't, you know, we're going to keep doing it this way because this is the way we've done it for a long time. And so I reach a ceiling. And I think a lot of the people that I talk to have also come to that point where they've reached a ceiling. If they get promoted 2 times, they're going to make less money, kind of thing. And what I've learned now, being on the other side of it, having left a job where I was making over $500,000 a year, is now there's no ceiling. Like there's less certainty in terms of I don't have health insurance and a salary, and I have people relying on me to pay make sure that they're paid every 2 weeks. I have a team of 15 people, but like there's no cap, and like that amount of that piece of freedom right there, I didn't really understand until I like left my W-2. And I'll say another thing. I'll say it another way. Like I talk to a lot of people who are like, I can't leave a job, but I want to start a business, but I can't leave my job. And that's crazy. And, you know, I'm going to keep working here until the business takes off. And it's like, what I tell them is I'm like, A, you're not a Rolling Suns franchisee, which is okay. But B, if you spend 40, 50 hours a week on someone else's business, and you spend 10 to 15% of your week on your business, and you hire a general manager and pay him $60,000 a year, guess whose business is going to grow? Like, the person that you're spending the time on growing their business, that business is going to grow. And it's very unlikely that the business that you're operating as a side business is going to end up becoming valuable enough for you to leave your $200,000 or $300,000 a year salary. So it's like a chicken or the egg type of thing. And so I always urge people, don't start a business until you're ready to leave and go all in on the business, and make sure you have enough capital to burn to make you sure you feel safe doing that, and then make the plunge.
I've always told, especially, and I'm just saying that I've talked to men more about this than women, but any man, because I know a couple from X that I talked to, that talks their wife into leaving their job and living off their savings to search for a business and gets her buy-in, you've already won. That guy is going to be successful because you just sold the toughest client you ever had. The customers are going to be cake.
100%. So I'll share my experience with that. So I have a 2.5-year-old son and my daughter's 14 months. My wife stays at home with the kids full time. So like, I'm the sole provider of income in my house. And in 2022, I had the opportunity to take on this other brand, and I was already making over $500,000. And they're like, we're going to double your salary. So like, not an insignificant sum of money. And I came to my wife and she's 7 months pregnant. And I'm like, hey, like, I'm going to go, you know, I want your opinion. I'm not going to do this without you, but like, I'm going to find a business to franchise. Don't have the business yet, but I'm going to find it. I'm going to raise capital. I don't have the capital yet, and I've never raised capital, and I don't even know how, but I'm going to do it. Are you in? And she's like, Aaron, I know you'll take care of us. Go do what you want to do, you know? And like, that's a big, you know, sell to your point. And if someone can do that, yeah, they got the grit to go buy a business and start a business and do whatever it takes.
I've seen you pop up on social media lately. You've been on some podcasts. There's a lot of different takes, opinions on business. And I just sit back and consume some of it and laugh and just, you know, what are the worst takes that you're seeing out there? Just stuff that you shake your head when you see people just declare.
Great question, by the way. I'm loving this interview. The worst take I see is I'm going to buy a franchise, and because it's a franchise, I don't have to leave my job. And like, I can hire a general manager and the general manager will run it. Well, yes, that is true, right? If you go buy a McDonald's or you buy an Anytime Fitness or you buy some of these brands that have proven their model thousands of times, it's very hard for an emerging franchisor to provide the support necessary for semi-absentee or fully absentee ownership. Because when you do that, let's just put it from my perspective, not from a franchisee's perspective. I now have two franchisees. I have the general manager that needs field support from me and constant training to be good at making sure that the customer experience is delivered, right? Because the person who's not leaving their job, he doesn't, or she doesn't have it. And then I have the other franchisee, which is my actual franchisee who signed the franchise agreement, that spent $250,000 of their money and expects to get a return on that investment in a reasonable amount of time. And I have two franchisees, and I have one royalty stream that's going to be lackluster at best, right? And so I have to basically have to provide additional support, because the coaching strategies for those two types of people to be successful are wildly different. Mm-hmm. And I have less royalties to do that. Mm-hmm. And so that's not something I'm particularly interested in. And I don't think any person who buys a business should also be interested in that. Mm-hmm. It's almost like, it's like trying to be an entrepreneur, but only putting your toe in the water and then utilizing the franchise industry as the way to kind of achieve that. Mm-hmm. perceived sense of like, this is comfortable. And there are a lot of franchisors who will perpetuate that. They're brand new. They have no locations yet. And they're like, yeah, buy 5 to 10 territories, semi-absentee, hire a GM, and everything will be fine. And like, So I think from both sides, like the franchisor side selling that and the searcher ETA person saying, I'm going to buy it and I'm going to keep my private equity job at $400,000 a year. Like those two things are coming together in a way that I believe is very dangerous. And then they're taking out $2 million SBA loans and personally guaranteed, you know, or $500,000 SBA loans, personally guaranteed. It's like, it's nuts.
If I would have not been here for the hell that we've been through in this 12 months, I'd be living in Puerto Rico or something. The amount of shit that I would have missed and the crap I've been through, if you were not involved in this business, I don't know what you would have done. I don't get it. It doesn't work that way. It makes no sense. The only reason I'm still alive, and I tell him on a day-to-day basis, is my COO, who as of Friday is now the CEO, spent 20 years building from scratch a multi-state plumbing company.
Right.
If it wasn't for him, I don't know what we would do. And let's be honest, I got his resume. He had 7 other offers. I called him 3 times before 7:30 a.m. I waited till 7:30. I want to call him at 7. I said, dude, what do I got to do? I said, let's talk. He goes, no, that's not how it's going to go down. He went and listened to 5 of my podcasts and said, I don't know why, but I'm in and I'm going to turn down these other offers. It was the greatest decision I've ever made, having somebody of that knowledge depth. He ran the marketing, the social media, the sales. He's been in the truck. Right. The guy knows the business, but more importantly, he's the exact opposite of me. He's so even killed. And right. Having that presence and that experience and going, hey, man, he literally said to me a couple months ago, he goes, you think this is like new to me? He goes, I've been here a million times, baby. We'll be all right. I'm like, dude, yes. Thank you.
Right. But you had to do that for a period of time and understand the business enough to know what you were hiring for.
1,000%.
You had to know.
And more importantly, because what people don't know and I haven't shared is we're doing off-market brokerage, like deal making is my jam. Like when I'm in the homes of these people, I can say I've sat in that seat and I know how you feel. And having right. that conversation opposed, I'm not sitting in a rooftop somewhere in New York in a suit trying to talk to some guy that's been behind the van for 20 years. That ain't going to fly.
Right. No, and you do. I do believe you have to lead from the front, especially with blue collar guys. If you hire a blue collar general manager and you don't know how to train him or what is going on in his seat, it's very unlikely he's going to respect and listen to you as you direct him to grow your business and try to get it to a multi-million dollar enterprise. It's like, even if you have the phenomenal incentive structure, if it's not the right person and you don't know how to do the thing you're hiring for, it's just very hard to get to where it needs to be. So that is I would say, to answer your question, the single worst thing and the single worst hot take that I could comment on in the ETA searcher/franchise space right now.
I look at your business and what some people do or do not know, but I spent 7 years starting my career, high scale Airbnb all across the country, 9 states, hotels, Tahoe, you name it, taught it, coached it, doesn't matter, right? In my opinion, your franchise is a no-brainer for large-scale property management STR companies. My buddy just bought 2 hotels in the Smoky Mountains because the quality level of said property is a higher than a regular because it needs to always be kept up. And I've always thought that if you could master the concierge, lawn mowing, water pressure, little handyman company, like that could be big business in a town like the Smoky Mountains, Destin, Florida, stuff like that, where you could do a retainer service per month. I would totally pay and just make sure that it's always tip top. Have you looked at jumping into, like, cause for me, I'm gonna screw the one thing. I'm going to find the big guy that can unlock 50 deals opposed to just go one-on-one.
So we place a big focus on this, both referral partners and commercial customers. I have franchisees fill out like 100 lists on a referral partner and a work and that. And a lot of my franchisees will be like, Aaron, 100 is just a starting point. I'm going to get 1,000, you know? But like Airbnb management companies is one of the targets of ours. And I've written the script, the emails, the text messages, the cadence, the drip campaigns, and the value proposition on how to get in front of those people. It's a huge, we're a huge value add. Like the Airbnb short-term rental company doesn't want to rebid the power washing, John's power washing company every, you know, quarter or every year. Like they want someone who's reliable, who has multiple locations across the country and the model's proven. And then they don't want to think about the cost. Like it just want, they just want it to come out of their bank account every quarter or every year or whatever. And know that the service is done. So that's a huge focus of ours. And then on the referral partner side, like painters don't want to power wash the exterior of a commercial building, but like they can't paint the exterior of a commercial building unless it's power washed. Mm-hmm. And so that's a huge referral source for us. And then on the commercial side, kind of your, to your point, the one to many kind of thing, we're working with property managers who manage 500 doors. Mm-hmm. Like, the general power washers knocking on a customer's house and trying to do a $300 job. We're on the proverbial golf course with the guy who, or the gal who manages 500 doors and has three property management companies. Like, and we're getting that person to trust us and develop a relationship with them. And then guess what? They never have to rebid power washing ever for any of their properties or any of the HOAs they manage. We'll come out, we'll do a better job than anyone else. We've got a proprietary process. We'll do it faster than anyone else. We'll do it more effectively than anyone else. Mm-hmm. And then we've solved a problem at scale. And then we're going to do that nationwide.
I think we as business owners and we as consumers of products have forgotten what we spend money on, right? And there's two things that exist because I've spent time with some rich people. And really, when you get more money, all you're really paying for is more comfort, right? So that's one thing over here. But really what we're paying for in this world that we live in is certainty. If I buy a furnace from my supplier and they say it's going to be there on Tuesday and I book my schedule on it and it doesn't do that, somebody's ass is getting chewed.
Sure. Right?
But 9 times out of 10, if there's a problem, they've already alerted me and we can fix it, right? So when you buy a service from you as a consumer, and let's say I'm sitting in my seat and I know my buddy has 5 hotels, I don't want to have to worry about on a Tuesday if Rolling Suds is going to show up or Bob's power wash is going to show up. I need them to show up. Like it's hinging on, we might have photos scheduled the next day. Like when you buy that playbook, that's really what you're buying, which is really the only thing that matters in this world, which is certainty.
Right. And I said this to you before we started, like you can spend money or you can spend time. And time is more valuable than money because like you can make more money. You can't make more time. And so if you can invest money to then take leaps ahead of time, which is what you do with a good franchise, you invest money, you get knowledge, you take way more steps forward, then you're in a great spot versus like spending the time. You're also going to spend the money during that time because you're going to make mistakes. Mm-hmm. That's once you become really wealthy, it's just a matter of how much of my time can I get back and what do I have to pay to do that? I mean, cause that's what wealthy people start to think about. That's why people fly private. They don't have to sit in an airport for 2 hours, worry about delays, you know, and not know whether or not they're going to get home. So instead of spending $600 on or $1,000 on a first class ticket, they spend $8,000 on a, or, you know, whatever, I don't know the math, $16,000, whatever it is. But the value of their time that they get back and the certainty, to your point, of like, I'm going to land on time and I'm going to get home back to my family on time. And that's the most important thing. That's worth the money. And so if business owners can start to think about that now, first-time entrepreneurs can start to think about that now, they'll have an easier time spending the money.
I have a mentor from Twitter who's done $2-3 billion roll-ups. He's in another one right now. And we have a joke because he travels a lot and so do I. And I was recruiting a CEO for the current company that we're at in Nashville. And this guy was a big whale. This guy had literally like built 100 million. And it was Tuesday. And I said, hey, do you mind if I take you to coffee tomorrow in Franklin, Tennessee? And he goes, what are you talking about? You're in Austin. I said, that's not what I asked. I said, do you mind if I take you to coffee tomorrow at 8:30? He's like, yeah, sounds good. I'll see you then. So I literally left my home at 4:30, got on a plane, flew, landed in Nashville, got to my rental car, went to an hour meeting with him, dropped off my rental car, got back on the plane. I was home at 5 o'clock in the afternoon, back home. And it was like, I unlocked this like whole world where it was like, okay, I just took my clothes I had. I did the meeting I needed to in person, and I got back the same day. And that's really what you're paying for, is like, that's a game changer for people. And that's the hardest part for dads or moms that travel, is optimizing more time with your kids. And, you know, that's really what you're paying for. So the better you can run your business, the more delegation that you can create, the more systems and process you can pay. That's really what you're creating, is just a win for you to get what you're stating is back more time.
Yeah. Yep. I didn't know you were, so I live in Franklin.
Okay. Yeah. I used to live in Nashville. So
okay, cool.
I worked at Husk,
okay.
In downtown.
Yeah. I know the restaurant. Yeah.
Yeah. So, I was in Nashville, when it was exploding again, after COVID. I was there. Okay. We lived in, over by the airport and Donaldson, and everybody said, it's never going to be anything. And I said, yeah, y'all are wrong. I lived in Austin, and this is the same thing going to happen. And now those homes went from, you know, 200 grand to like 700 grand, and it's blowing up. So we spent a month there.
I lived in Donaldson.
We spent a month in Elm Hill at an RV park. It's my favorite time. One of my favorite RV parks, right on the water, the peninsula.
I lived right off Elm Hill Pike in Timber Valley Drive.
Yeah, the Marina there, the RV park. That's where we stayed for a month. We came for one day and stayed for a month.
That's awesome. That's great. Yeah, I moved to Franklin. I did the Davidson County to Williamson County shuffle for the school districts. My wife and I about a year and a half ago.
Totally. What people don't understand is like Franklin, Tennessee, and that those outer parts. What people don't understand about Tennessee, that they're missing, right? Because Nashville gets all the credit and everything. And I've done a lot of business in the Smoky Mountains, is the amount of parks and green space that exists in Tennessee is second to none. The dog park that we used was like 6 acres. It was insane. Yeah. It was like, what is this? The dog would just go, and I'm just like doing work, and it's really great. I have my other opinions about Nashville as well too. I'm not a fan of Broadway and all that stuff. That whole scene. I was a bartender for 20 years. I'm a former alcoholic, so no thanks. Yeah. I'm good. But everything outside of that, I love the art, the music. It's great for families. It's just a really good town. And you know, that's just going to continue to explode.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, I love it down here. I'm from Southern California, and my wife's from Northern Michigan. So we met out here. She went to Vanderbilt, and then we just grew roots.
I love it. And what part of what city did you grow up in?
Newport Beach.
Okay. So I have a rule. It's a very hard and fast rule. If I am on a meeting or I'm on a phone call with anybody from Newport Beach and down, and they complain, I get off the call. La Jolla and Encinitas, to me, feels like a fucking movie. It doesn't feel right. When we were there, we were in San Clemente, which is one of my favorite cities. We were visiting my dad down in La Jolla. We went to lunch. It's like 60 degrees and sunny. We went on the patio. I was in dress clothes. I got out of my dress clothes, went swimming with the seals in the middle of the day, and I go, where the fuck am I? What is this gorgeous ass, insane place? Let me tell you something, guys. Anybody that's listening, and you've talked about it for years, let me explain to you the perfect day. Okay. You rent a ridiculously amazing car, Tesla, convertible, whatever it is. And you come out of La Jolla through Torrey Pines, and you cruise that place all the way through Carlsbad with some good music on, you will not have a better time in your life.
Right.
It's the best.
I grew up surfing that coast, you know, for 27 years of my life. So
I love it. So if people want to find out about the franchise, they want to reach out to you, how would they do that?
I would follow me on Twitter. Super active there. Aaron Harper, CEO. That's like direct access to me if you send me a DM there. If you know you just want to learn more about the opportunity and not reach out yet, RollingSudsFranchise.com is a great place to go and learn more about it. Or you can just Google my name, Aaron Harper, Rolling Suds on Google, and there's articles, and I've been on like 40 podcasts in the last year. So there's a ton of content that you can consume before getting to me. I do set the expectation. It's now the 25th of January in 2024, and I'm currently booked out 3 weeks of people. Like, there's 78 people waiting to talk to me right now. So if you are interested in Rolling Suds, please be patient. I'm currently in the process of building a sales team, but it is me start to finish right now, and I did that on purpose for the first 12 months.
When you were a little boy and your parents told you you could be anything, never in your life did you think 78 people would be waiting to talk to you?
No, about a power washing business.
No. And here's a better thing. Those 78 people never thought they'd be waiting to you to talk about a power washing business either.
No, they went to Columbia and got an MBA and thought they were going to go work at McKinsey and make 120 grand a year. And they're like, wait a minute, I can make way more money running a home service business and scaling a franchise instead of doing that.
I told my business partner in the brokerage, I said, I got one focus and one thing only. I said, I'm going to bring a little style back to the business broker world.
Yeah.
Because they are straight laced. The websites are tired and their clothing is tired. For all you people that sat in the classroom, I dropped out of college 3 times, guys. So, you know, we do what we do, you know, life moves you in weird ways. You know, what can I say? So. But man, I can't thank you enough, guys. If you got some value from this episode, send it to a friend, and we'll see you next time.